You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders with an emphasis on binge eating, and I am here to help you break free from dieting, guilt, body shame, and binging for good. That is my mission. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you would like to call in with questions, the number is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. If you are watching on Instagram, you can just leave a comment below and I will answer it. Just one more time, the phone number to call into the show is 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, because the solution to binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the solution is not yet another diet. The key to change is to focus on what's eating at you. That is how we banish binging for good. Let's look at what's weighing on you, what's eating at you, and deal with that. I guarantee you, your eating situation will change for good. Okay, so my topic today is how to stop feeling guilty after eating or after binging. So sometimes the more you try to stop yourself from eating something, the more you eat it. And you feel pulled towards that forbidden food like, I don't know, the Millennium Falcon pulled to the Death Star. Yes, I love Star Wars. Okay, so finally, you just say, I can't resist. You give in, you take a bite, just one little bite. You feel guilty, you have another bite, and before you know it, the whole whatever it is that you're eating is gone. Plus, whatever else you haven't been letting yourself have, and pretty soon you have just eaten the kitchen. And that is followed by a night of guilt, shame, and self-loathing. Does that sound familiar? I totally get it. Feeling guilty after binging is what most people feel. And you know what? I have been there myself, because the reason I do this work as a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders is because I struggled with eating disorders myself. So I know what it feels like to be in it. And I also know that there is total and complete freedom from it. You really can turn that shame into support. Yes, you can. And you can break free from binging for good. So today I'm going to help you stop feeling guilty when you eat. First of all, why do you feel guilty? Well, we often set conditions on how we're going to feel about ourselves. I can't do that. I'm not worth it. Or I can't do that. I'm not allowed to do that because I'm supposed to be at this weight before I eat that, whatever it is. Or whatever it is that you tell yourself, you have to be. I have to be at this weight before I can do this. I have to be at this weight before I could date. I have to be at this weight before I'm an acceptable person. We set these conditions about ourselves, and we don't feel good about ourselves until we meet those conditions, which are just, you know, imposed on us really from the $60 billion diet industry. So when we can't fulfill those self-imposed expectations, we feel bad about ourselves. Maybe we even feel guilty. And then we might use food to cope. And now you feel guilty over eating instead of feeling guilty about something in life. And that's followed by shame, self-talk that's really harsh and mean, which makes you feel even worse, which makes you turn to food again, and the cycle continues. Maybe you think that you feel guilty because you're triggered by food, or you don't have enough willpower, or you don't have enough control. Keep in mind, binge eating disorder particularly, is not about willpower, it is not about control, and it is not even about food. So if you feel guilty for what you're eating, whether or not that turned into a binge, I was just at a restaurant the other day, and I don't know, I could hear the people next to me, And these women were like, oh my God, I shouldn't eat this. I feel so guilty. I shouldn't. Like, I'm going to totally work out tomorrow. Oh, they're feeling guilty for eating dessert. Why? Why do we feel guilty for eating dessert? Sometimes we end up binging because of deprivation. We tend to want what we think we cannot have. So if you tell yourself, hey, I'm on a diet, or I can't have this or that, and we don't let ourselves have it, we want it more, and we end up binging because we want the thing that we cannot have. The experience of deprivation or the anticipation of deprivation leads to wanting it more. If you tell yourself, I'm not going to eat those cookies, I'm not going to eat those cookies, it's hard to stop once you've started eating those cookies, because you say something along the lines of, well, I ate one or two or three. Well, the day is ruined. The night is ruined. I've been bad, so I might as well eat all the cookies and then everything else. Sometimes binging is about coping. Well, let me just stop and say that Sheila on Instagram is saying, I appreciate how often you say it's not about control or about food. Every other treatment model has told me otherwise. Just you saying that feels relaxing, like you can exhale. Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad that you are saying that. Listen, I've my entire years that I've been in practice, and I have been doing this for 20 years. I started out working at an eating disorder clinic, and then I had an internship with I was lucky enough to have an internship with a psychoanalyst who specializes in eating disorders. And while I was at the clinic, I learned that what they were doing was counterproductive. They were focusing on what people were eating instead of why, or what they weren't eating, or they were trying to get them to eat if they were restricting or anorexic, instead of why. If you're doing something you don't want to do, or you're not doing something you want to do or know you should do, why? There's always a reason, and that reason isn't about willpower. It isn't about control. It isn't logical. It is psychological. There is some underlying reason that needs your attention. It's not about food. Again, my favorite analogy is a weed and a root. If you pluck a weed, what's going to happen? Well, at first, it's going to be gone. You're going to be like, oh, great, no weeds. Garden looks great. But eventually, of course, that weed is going to grow back. Why? Because you did not get to the root. Same thing with binge eating or any kind of unhappy, unhealthy relationship with food, any kind of eating disorders. You've got to get to the root. Why do I love this analogy so much? Because we can't see the root. It is underground. It is out of our sight. But we know it's there because it's creating the weed. We have ideas, thoughts, needs, wants, all kinds of things happening in our unconscious mind. We are in the dark about it, but it has a lot to do. Those are the roots that have a lot to do with our behavior. If we only focus on what we see, we never get to the true problem, and we never change for good. When you get the roots out, you're done. The weeds never going to grow back, because you've got to the root, and the behavior with food is never going to go back. Maybe sometimes there might be a relapse, but you know what it's about, or sabotage, you know what it's about, you can deal with it, but ultimately it's gone forever. That's why I talk about liberation and not about recovery. Recovery is we recover from a breakup. We recover from, I don't know, a bad cold. We recover from COVID, hopefully. I don't believe we recover from binge eating. I believe that we completely liberate ourselves from it and never have to deal with it again. If you're dealing with depression, you don't say, well, I'm in recovery from depression. No, you say I was depressed and now I'm not. Life is good. Awesome. I'm not in recovery from anxiety. No, you're just not anxious anymore. So forget this in recovery business. Let's talk about liberation. Okay, so sometimes binge eating is about coping. More often, it is about coping with something. And sometimes what we're coping with, we turn so quickly to food, we don't even know we're triggered. That's where it's in deeply rooted. That's where we're in the dark. That's why I created my food mood formula guide to help you figure that out. If you go so quickly to food, you think you're triggered by food. No, you're triggered by something, some situation, some thought, something's going on within you that is triggering you, and binging is your way of coping. So more often it is a way of coping than being about deprivation or anything like that. So if you're turning to food, you are turning away from something else. We eat to avoid feelings. We binge to express what we can't express with our minds. For example, people who eat so much until they are in physical pain are often turning emotional pain to physical pain. It is easier to deal with physical pain, which is wait it out, than it is to process emotional pain. If we're lonely, if we're empty, if we have some hole in our lives, in our soul, we can symbolically fill that with food. So we want to be really interested in not what you are eating, but why. What is the symbolism? What is it doing for you? How is it helping you cope in that moment? And also, food is an easy way to cope. So if you're, say, upset about a situation with another person, say you're just really upset with your partner or your boss or your sibling or your parents or your kids, some other person, but you can't control how that other person reacts to you. So you know what? That can be displaced into stuffing the feelings and then getting mad at yourself for eating. Then it's between you and food instead of you and another person. And why food? I've said this before, and it's so unbelievable that I have to say it again. This one woman said to me, "Hey, why can't I be addicted to meth instead of to food? At least I'd be skinny." And she was serious. She was absolutely serious. She would rather be a meth addict than what she thought she was addicted to food, which, of course, that is another misconception. There's no such thing as food addiction. We are not addicted to the substance of food, even though it may feel like it. We may be addicted to the action of eating to resolve something. But that is different from food addiction, which is a whole other radio show, which I will do another time. So why food? Why do we turn to food when we're upset? Well, our very first experience of being comforted and being connected and feeling safe and cozy in the world is when we're infants and we are fed. So our first experience of relationship and bliss and just the perfect, amazing bonding experience of us and another person is bound up with our experience being fed. We're held in someone's arms. Usually there's eyes looking down at us, you know, smiling. Oh, you're so cute. And we see ourselves reflected in that gaze and we feel loved and we feel lovable and we feel safe. And all of that is bound up with feeding. So in our psyche, even though we don't logically think of it this way, in our psyches, food equals safety and relationship. Right? That's the blissful connection of ourselves to another person. So the experience of being fed becomes the experience of being loved and feeling lovable. And also, babies, when they're, especially infants, they just get into this sort of like drug-like zone, like this blissful, almost like a drugged state where just everything is right with the world. So on some level, we're trying to recapture that. We're trying to feel safe, feel blissful, tune out all the stuff that's going on in the world or in ourselves. And that's why we turn to food. Also, people can be unavailable, unpredictable, and unreliable. Yes, milk drunk. It is so cute. Thank you, Sheila. Yes, that milk drunk. That's like on some level, we want to feel that, that just everything's good. I'm at peace. And we're trying to recapture that, although we're not aware of that. We think we have no control. We think we have no willpower. We're busy beating ourselves up instead of being curious and going, what's this about? Why? People can be unpredictable, unavailable, and unreliable. Food is predictable, available, and reliable. And that is why it is often easier to have a relationship with food, in a sense, than it is with people. When we talk about comfort food, we're actually talking about a wish to be comforted by someone else. So the next time you're turning to food, think about why. What are you turning away from? What are you trying to avoid, or what are you trying to experience? What might be on your mind if you were not thinking about what you were eating? If you weren't mad at yourself for eating, what would you be upset about? Who would you be upset with? And by the way, what are these feelings that we try to avoid? So in no particular order, here are some of the main ones. Anger, sadness, anxiety, guilt, shame, loneliness. Those are some of the feelings that we have. And as counterintuitive as it sounds, the only way to get rid of feelings is to feel them. You cannot stuff them down. And you can't get rid of angry feelings towards someone else by getting mad at yourself for eating. All you do is you feel bad about yourself, and then the cycle continues. And then you end up eating to get away from your own mean voice. More on that later. So binging is a temporary way of coping that only leaves you feeling worse. This is why I call it a frenemy. It does something for you. It is a friend. It helps you cope in some way, even if it's just avoiding a situation or a feeling, even if it's just getting me time that you don't ordinarily let yourself have, even if it's just the only pleasure you have in your life. It's helping you cope with something, but it's also hurting you. So it is a friend in that it helps you cope, and it is an enemy in that it hurts your soul. It hurts your self-esteem. It hurts your body. So identifying and expressing your feelings, the hidden feelings often, is the first step to lasting change. But I told you I was going to help you get rid of the guilt. So let's talk about that. I'm going to give you three strategies to help you stop feeling guilty. First is go on a word diet. I do not normally say, hey, I believe in diets, but I believe in my word diet. I believe in my word diet. Because if you do a check on your self-talk and you look at the way you talk to yourself, what words are you using? Because words can be extremely powerful, and they can make you feel bad or they can make you feel good. If you use these words that I'm going to tell you that you need to eliminate from your vocabulary, this is an elimination diet. You won't be able to be harsh with yourself, because when you're harsh, you're mean to yourself, you feel bad. When you feel bad, you can't simultaneously make yourself feel bad and make yourself feel good and supported and loved and accepted. So you make yourself feel bad with words. You feel bad, you go to food to cope, to escape your own mean voice. That's why I want to really look at these words and eliminate them from your vocabulary. Fat is the first one. Fat is a substance. It is not a feeling. Don't call yourself fat. Can't is, it's so absolute. You know, I think Henry Ford was the person who said, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So when you say you can't, you're discouraging yourself and you're eliminating any kind of hope. And you're not taking your own side. Calling yourself some incarnation of dumb, stupid, idiot. Those are three words, but I'm kind of using them as one. You know, oh my God, I'm such an idiot. Ugh, so dumb. These are words that make you feel bad. Don't use them about yourself. Don't turn them on yourself. If you feel stupid, dumb, or like an idiot, that's a bad feeling. And you're making yourself feel that way because of the way you're talking to yourself. If a friend of yours said, oh my God, you're such a dumb, stupid idiot, you probably wouldn't want to be friends with that person. So one important thing to do is to watch the way that you talk to yourself in that way. Another one for the word diet is the word normal. I call it the N word. What the heck is normal? It is a setting on the dryer. That's all it is. I have yet to meet a normal person. So if you're saying you're not normal or you want to be normal, what the heck are you saying? All you're doing is making yourself feel abnormal and weird and bad. And then what's going to happen? You feel bad about yourself. And then there's food to distract you. So the word normal has to go. It's got to go. The word ridiculous. Often we say, oh, that was so ridiculous of me. Or that was, I had a thought, this sounds ridiculous. Really? Why do we do these disclaimers? What is ridiculous about your thoughts? What is ridiculous about your feelings? Get more curious about what you're thinking and what you're feeling instead of observing it and labeling it as ridiculous. Should, that's a big one. Don't should on yourself. I did not make that up. I thought my college professor made it up, but apparently it's one of the oldest jokes there is. Don't should on yourself. The word should only makes you feel bad about yourself. Again, when you should on yourself, you feel bad. When you feel bad, what's in the kitchen? DoorDash, right? The idea here is to not let yourself feel bad about you. Instead, be more curious. And the last one is but. But as in, oh, I did really well on this particular job, but I'm not where I should be. Yeah, I'm going on a lot of dates, but I'm not meeting the right person. It basically takes away your experience. It takes away your good experience and leaves you with the bad experience. So fat, can't, dumb, stupid, idiot, normal, ridiculous, should, and but are words to eliminate from your vocabulary. You will feel better. And when you feel better, you are less likely to use food to feel better. You won't need to. If you're not making yourself feel bad, you don't need to cope with that feeling by eating ice cream. And of course, I go into a much deeper dive into explaining how these words affect your mindset and your feelings. In my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. You can get your copy on Amazon in all formats, including audio where I read it to you. So that's an option. But those are words that are very important to think about and look at and eliminate. Another way to feel, to change the way you feel about yourself, because again, it's hard to feel guilty. I'm going to go a little bit more into guilt and shame later, but it's hard to feel guilty and bad when you're curious about yourself and when you're taking your own side, when you're being nice to yourself. So another thing that's very important to do is to turn your critic into a friend. There is a great quote by Marcia Hutchinson. She's a body image expert, and her quote is this: if you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. Isn't that the truth? If you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. And that is a reminder of how harsh and critical we can be to ourselves. And the way you talk to yourself determines the way you feel about yourself. When you feel bad, well, so Sheila's saying, how do we actually turn a critic into a friend? Again, those are things that I go into in depth in my book, but I'm going to tell you, first, you got to speak nicely to yourself, right? Stop the mean talk. Catch it. You're not going to instantly go like, oh, I love myself. No, but I want you to start to catch those harsh words. Oh, I just called myself an idiot. I wouldn't say that to anybody else. I'm not going to say that to me. Oh, I just told myself that my feelings are ridiculous. You want to just stop and make space to question that mode of being. It's not like a switch that you just suddenly flip. You know, no change is like that. Nobody goes to learn an instrument, figures out where their hands should be or their fingers should be, and then plays. You've got to keep practicing. So first it's, okay, I just said something to myself that was really harsh, even though it may still feel real. But you just want to stop, notice, and give yourself that moment to notice that's creating space where later on you're going to put in more kindness. The first step is to just notice what you're dealing with. You cannot fight an invisible army. And the army in this case is an invisible army of thoughts and ideas about you that are just constantly, you know, hitting you. If you're beating yourself up with these ideas, you're just being battered all the time. But when you make that army visible, then you can see what you're fighting, and then you can fight back. So the first step, Sheila, is to see what's going on. Oh, I was just really harsh to myself. And a lot of people don't even know they're harsh to themselves. They'll be like, well, but what I said was ridiculous. No, that's mean. But I am an idiot. No, you're not. Calling yourself names is not helpful. Would you say that to anybody else in your life? Oh, no, I would never say that to anybody else in my life. That would be mean. Exactly. If you wouldn't say it to somebody else, don't say it to yourself. Imagine how you talk to someone who just binged. Would you yell at them and be disgusted and tell them they're gross and it's ridiculous and they're out of control and horrible? I don't think so. I hope not. Would you make them feel guilty? Would you be like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. That's horrible. What's wrong with you? You suck. You're ridiculous. If people knew, they'd be disgusted by you. You would never say that to a friend. So don't say it to yourself. You'd probably speak in a supportive and encouraging way. Maybe you'd be kind to your friend, understanding. Imagine if you were kind and understanding to yourself. So the next time you turn to food, the next time you binge, show that same level of compassion to yourself. You are going to feel better. You know, when we can make ourselves feel better with words, we don't need food to cope, right? And accept that change is a process. A caterpillar doesn't immediately turn into a butterfly. It has to go through a whole time when it's in a cocoon, it's in a dark, small space. Everything is black, can't see a thing. And eventually, because of evolution, that caterpillar breaks out of the cocoon and has become a butterfly. A colorful, beautiful butterfly. Change is a process. So allow yourself to go through the process. Any kind of change takes time. I wish I could tell you I had the magic formula and next week you're going to be good. I wish I could do that, but I would be lying to you. But I can tell you that if you follow the principles that I talk about in my book, in this show, in my programs, you will evolve and you will turn into that butterfly. It takes time, but it's worth it. And that's liberation. So if you end up binging, instead of going, oh my God, I can't believe I did this. I'm ridiculous. I have no control. I'm going to be and use all the words on the word diet. Instead of doing that, which just makes you feel bad about yourself, look at it as an opportunity. Huh. What was that about? What was going on with me? Why did I just eat that? Instead of look what I ate. Oh, say, what's eating at me? What's going on with me? What if I weren't thinking about food, if I weren't beating myself for what I just ate, what would be on my mind? What would I be worried about? What would I be upset at? Who would I be upset at? You know, were you, maybe you were sad, mad, lonely, afraid. What's going on? Maybe you were hungry because you didn't eat enough during the day, but that's a binge that's based on deprivation. Usually it's more than that. It's a way of coping. What were you coping with? You know, and keep in mind that, you know, life is a journey. You are evolving. As you do so, take your own side. And the more curious you are about why you're binging, and the more you can take care of yourself and be there for yourself and be a friend to yourself, you're not going to feel guilty. You can't be kind of guilty and curious at the same time. And you won't feel shame. So here's the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt references behavior. Guilt is like, oh, I can't believe I ate that. I feel bad that I ate that. Shame is, I can't believe I ate that. I feel bad about myself. So guilt is about behavior. Shame is about you as a person. It's not that, you know, you did something you wish you hadn't done. It's there's something wrong with you. So if you feel shame about yourself, about your behavior, the first goal would be to turn that into guilt and then challenge the guilt. But let me just go back a little bit and talk about a little bit more about types of guilt. So there are different types of guilt. One of the things I talk about in my book was my friend and I went to a class, Krav Maga class, learning to be all, you know, tough, not. I was so bad at it. I am very bad at self-defense. Okay. And when we left, my friend said, oh my God, I feel so guilty. She left her husband at home with her twins, and she was feeling so guilty because she was having fun taking a self-defense class. So that is called depletion guilt. Depletion guilt is when you feel guilty because what you chose to do for yourself in your mind is going to deplete somebody else. In her mind, she left her kids with her husband to babysit. I'm sorry, I just call that being a dad, but that's just me. Anyway, that was depletion guilt. She felt that because she chose to do something for herself, she was somehow taking away something from her husband. So here are some other ways that depletion guilt shows up. You know, if I'm unhappy in my relationship, but if I leave, that person is going to be devastated and I can't do that to them. In other words, you choose to suffer rather than to impose anything painful on another person. So now you stay in a bad marriage and maybe eat over that. I'm turning down that great job in Chicago because my mom was so upset when my sister moved to New York. I can't do that to her. I'll stay in LA even if it's not the right thing for my career. Again, so afraid that you're going to deplete or upset somebody else that you end up depleting yourself. Another one is, oh, I so want to be an artist, but my parents really want me to go to law school. Everybody in my family goes to law school. I can't disappoint them. I'm going to go to law school. So again, making life choices about for yourself based on how they will affect other people. And then you know what happens? You feel resentful on some level. You feel mad. Now you're in law school when you want to be an artist. Now you're in LA, you want to be in Chicago. And now you're stuck in a terrible marriage just because you're afraid of hurting your partner. So what happens to that resentment? What happens to that anger? It gets turned on yourself because you stuff it down and you get mad at yourself for eating or for what you weigh. And that's why it's so important to just recognize what is your truth rather than compromise yourself on really, we all need compromise in relationships, but these types of things are pretty significant. When we are always compromising lest we hurt somebody else, that's not actually compromise. That's depleting ourselves. Another kind of guilt is called self-guilt. And that's the guilt you feel as a result of just being a person in this world. It's the result of having any kind of needs or wants, feeling guilty for existing, feeling guilty for wanting, for needing. The sense is that by needing anything, needing food, needing comfort, needing relationship, needing a sense of accomplishment, needing whatever it is that you need, that you are somehow exposing a deficiency in yourself. There's something wrong with you for that. And it's fundamentally wrong to have needs. So self-guilt sounds like, I shouldn't be so hungry. I shouldn't be so tired. I'm mad at myself that I'm hungry. I'm mad at myself that I'm tired. And why do I use tired? A lot of people who struggle with food also struggle with just acknowledging and recognizing their basic human needs and fight sleep the way they fight hunger, or won't even let themselves get hungry, or when they get tired, will eat to stay awake. Hey, I'll go to another way self-guilt shows up is, I'll go to whatever movie or restaurant or vacation or whatever you want because it makes no difference to me. I'm just happy to go wherever. That is such a lie. You do care. You care. But you're not allowing yourself to say, hey, I'd rather not do that. Or, yeah, you know what? I'll babysit for you tomorrow night. I can cancel my plans. No problem. And this involves a sense that your needs and wants will be burdensome to other people. Depletion guilt is that you're going to deplete people or they're going to feel somehow really sad or bad. Self-guilt is that you are going to burden other people and they're just going to have to tolerate you if you assert anything that you actually need or want. And if you struggle with self-guilt, you probably go out of your way to meet the needs of other people, often at the expense of your own. And all of these types of guilt are related to food issues and to binging because of displacement. Instead of feeling guilty about something in our lives, we feel guilty about what we are eating or what we weigh. And then binge eating is a way of distracting yourself or comforting yourself when you do feel guilty. So it's a vicious cycle. I want to look at instead, what is it that's going on with you? Why do you think that what someone else will feel matters more than what you need or want? I'm not talking about being selfish. I'm talking about self-care. And why do you think that if you assert what you want, that people will just feel that that is burdensome? Is it an experience that you have had in your life that you're afraid of re-experiencing that? And so you're avoiding it. Okay, so guilt, again, is different from shame. Guilt is about what you're doing. Shame is about who you are. Shame has to do with your essential character. Guilt sounds like, oh, there's something wrong with what I did, or there's something wrong with what I want to do or don't want to do, whatever it is. It has to do with behavior. Shame sounds like there is something really wrong with who I am. There's something essentially bad about me. And if you ever say anything like, I was really bad last night. I ate pizza and cookies, and that was just the beginning. Oh, I was so bad. Then what crime are you accusing yourself of? Like, it just sounds like semantics, right? But really, when we talk to ourselves, we're listening to ourselves. When we say I was so bad, we feel bad about ourselves instead of, huh, yeah, I ate the pizza and the cookies and the ice cream and the whatever. What was that about? What was going on with me? So if you feel good when you eat salad and bad when you eat anything with a carb, your sense of self is overly tied to what you eat. If that is the case, Sheila, since you asked what to do, here's what to do. You have to be much more curious. Why did I eat that? What problem did that solve for me? When you can get more curious instead of critical and ask yourself why you did a particular behavior, why you ate that, why you did that, when another part of you doesn't want to do it, you're going to find answers. If you just beat yourself up, if you just call yourself names, if you shame yourself, you're going to feel bad, and then you're going to have to get away from yourself by eating. That's why this is not logical. It is psychological. People ask me all the time, this makes no sense. Why am I eating when I want to lose weight and stop binging? Why do I keep doing it? Well, in part because you don't have another way of coping. You don't have another way of soothing yourself. You don't have another way of being with yourself. Yeah. Yes, it feels good and then it feels horrible. It is a friend, but ultimately it is an enemy. It helps you. It distracts. Binging distracts you. It comforts you. It fills the void. It expresses pain. It does so many different things, but ultimately it hurts you. Because it distracts you from you, and it keeps you in a perpetual fight with you and your body. And that is not good for your self-esteem. You cannot hate yourself into accepting and loving yourself. So think about it this way. Let's think about an internal courtroom. You've got a self. You've got a part of you that has needs and wants and feelings. Then you have this prosecutor who's constantly telling you what you're doing wrong and what you're feeling is wrong and what you want is wrong and just constantly at you, right? Your inner critic, your inner prosecutor. Where's the defense attorney? Where's the defense attorney who could say, wait a minute, let's be curious, let's be understanding, let's be supportive. Why did you do that? Instead of, you ate that. Why? What were you trying to do for yourself? I guarantee you, if you are turning to food, you're trying to help yourself. It's just in a way that ultimately doesn't help. So remember that binging is not a criminal act. You want to be more curious about the behavior. What is it in service for? If you weren't binging, what would you be left thinking about? Are you escaping some thoughts about other people you don't want to have? Are you escaping some thoughts about yourself? Because if you are critical and vicious to yourself, you're going to want to get away from yourself. Binging, you go into that binge zone, right? You're not feeling anything. You're just in this mode, right? This zone. It's an escape from that self-critical voice. So these are all really important ways to think about yourself and food and stay in a state of curiosity. Instead of looking at what you are eating, instead of focusing on willpower, instead of focusing on control, focus on what's eating at you. Not what you are eating, but why. Okay. Any questions from folks on Instagram? Any comments? Any questions? Nope. All right. So I am going to... Okay. These are some questions that I've had in the past. We just have a few more minutes, but I have time to answer them. So what are a few counterintuitive strategies we can employ to stop binging? Like, instead of depriving yourself of comfort food, redefine it. I think the important thing to do is focus, again, not deprive yourself, because deprivation leads to binging when we want what we cannot have. But I think really learning to comfort yourself with words is so important. And that's why I came up with a lot of strategies to help you do that. So if you are binging, first it's why. And if you don't know and you're saying everything is fine, there's nothing bothering me, nothing is upsetting me, then use my food mood formula to figure out what that might be. It's available in my it's available on my website and in my bio if you're on Instagram. But basically, smooth and creamy foods are associated with the need for comfort. So if ice cream is your thing, you want to, that's your clue. Okay, I got to comfort myself with words. Filling foods that take up a lot of space within, those are associated with filling a void, loneliness, emptiness. And if that's your thing, you want to look at the holes in your life. How else can you fill them other than symbolically with food? If you need more friends, if you need more companionship, if you need more satisfying relationships, if you need to feel better in your career, maybe you have dissatisfaction in your life, you got to look at that. But also, if you're lonely, hey, if it's, you know, 2 a.m. and you're lonely, you're not going to probably call your friend. But what you can do is turn your loneliness into solitude. Loneliness is being alone with a mean part of you. Solitude is when you can be there with a kind, supportive, loving, accepting part of you. That's the difference between loneliness and solitude. And anything with a crunch, if it's crackers or chips or, you know, whatever, anything that makes you bite down hard, that is associated with forms of anger, such as irritation, annoyance, frustration, anger, rage. Now, there are so many different forms of anger that you want to take a look at what's upsetting you and learn to express that with words, not necessarily to the person who's upsetting you, but for yourself, to another person, into a journal, in some way that has to come out. So that's basically so you use the food mood formula. Then when you identify what's going on, you express it. I have a lot of prompts in my book to help you express those feelings. And last, you respond to yourself using my VARI acronym. You validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. That is the formula for how you change your relationship with yourself, which will change your relationship with food. So I hope that helps. If you have any questions, feel free to email them to me or to drop them in a DM in Instagram or anywhere. I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. You can also listen later on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts. And remember to stay curious, not critical. And I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only